Good evening, and welcome to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY Community Public Radio. I'm Pamela Varcone, your host this evening. We're so glad you joined us for this global adventure through the world's food economy. Leading the expedition is storyteller and author Kelsey Timmerman. Kelsey came to the world's attention after authoring his first book, Where Am I Wearing?, a tour of the countries, factories, and people that make our clothes. He has followed that success with his newest book, Where Am I Eating?, an adventure through the global food economy. His writing has appeared in publications such as Christian Science Monitor and Condé Nast Portfolio and has aired on WNPR. Kelsey is also the co-founder of The Facing Project, which seeks to connect people through stories to strengthen community. Kelsey has spent the night in Castle Dracula in Romania, has farmed on four continents, taught an island village to play baseball in Honduras, and in another life worked as a scuba instructor in Key West, Florida. Kelsey's mission is to connect people around the world. Welcome, Kelsey.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
We're delighted. And providing scholarly information and observations along our journey is Dr. Kiki, I'm going to let her pronounce her last name for me.
Anastasakis.
Anastasakis, professor of political science at Northampton Community College, and Donna Acera, professor of communication at NCC. Kiki and Donna are organizers of the upcoming Peace and Justice Conference being held at Northampton Community College on March 27, where Kelsey will be the keynote speaker. Welcome, Kiki and Donna.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
And welcome to you out there, our WDIY listeners. Whether you think you're interested in global economics and politics or not, I'll venture you're interested in the price you pay for the clothes you put on each morning and the cost of that first cup of coffee. But before we, the consumer, think about those things and that end-of-line purchase, there is an entire world of farmers and laborers who struggle for survival we know nothing about. It's those stories that Kelsey is going to share with us and those thoughts that Kiki and Donna are bringing to our doorstep through the Peace and Justice Conference. And I'm going to start with you, Kelsey, because I know that you have some wonderful examples to hook our audience right from the beginning with some of the great stories that you have encountered along the way.
Yeah, for sure. You know, if you're a listener sitting there, like, why do I need to know about this stuff? You know, it's one of the most tangible ways that we interact with the world every single day. Like, we're all wearing clothes right now, most of us, and I am, for your listeners, for sure.
We appreciate that visual confirmation. Thank you so much.
Yes, I am wearing clothes. There you go. That's really important information. So actually, 97% of our clothes are made somewhere else. And the amount of food that we've imported into the country has doubled in the last 10 years. So whether you like it or not, this is the world that we live in. Used to be that we had a connection with the butcher, the baker, the garment maker. We kind of knew what their lives were like, but that's not the reality in today's world. So, we're starting off this adventure to locate where our stuff comes from and meet the people who made them. For me, it kind of started off as just this an excuse to go somewhere, really. I had this t-shirt that said, come with me, my tropical paradise, and it had tattoo from Fantasy Island on it, and I thought, well, at that point in my life, I was I didn't need much of a reason, excuse to go anywhere, to go get stories, and I knew I could write about those stories and get published in different magazines and newspapers, so I thought, what if I just went where this t-shirt was made? So I ended up going to look at check the tag, and I went to Honduras. Because that's where it was made, and I had all the adventures I was looking to have. I almost got killed by a Fertilance snake, which was this horrible experience. And I taught an island village to play baseball, which was an awesome experience. And I had all these adventures, and I thought, at least I should do is go to the factory where the shirt was made. So just kind of on a whim, I showed up at the factory gate. And, of course, they wouldn't let me have a tour of the factory because why would they? I really wasn't even sure what I was doing there. And then I waited for the workers to be let out, and I waited along the side of the factory. And there I met a fellow by the name of Amilcar. And suddenly it got real. You know, suddenly I saw that I was along this chain of producer and consumer, and I was kind of the end mark of that chain. And here I was face to face with someone who made my shirt. And I had a lot of questions for him. You know, I want to know if that life provided, that job provided a better life for him and his family. You know, where he got paid, good things about sweatshops and child labor. And I totally didn't ask those questions. And I think deep down, I really didn't want to know at that time. And then that experience kind of haunted me. And I, you know, every day I put on clothes and I have no idea what life is like for the people who make our clothes. And so that really kind of what launched this deeper obsession with where stuff comes from. So I want to go find out. So I went to Bangladesh where my underwear were from, and I went to Cambodia where my all-American Levi's blue jeans were from, and I went to China where my flip-flops were from to meet the people who are responsible for making some of our clothes. And then that experience led to looking at food labels to see where a lot of the food that we import comes from as well.
Well, Kelsey, I think that you've really hit on something, and obviously you have, because both of your books have been very successful. It was interesting to me because I was in an audience where you were speaking a year or so ago, and I remember you asked us all to stand up, and you asked us to look at the labels in our clothes, and you said, you know, you can look at your jacket or your shirt or your pants or shoes or whatever, but I want everybody to come up with one place where an article of their clothing is from. And I remember in that audience, which had at least 100 people in it, I don't think there was one single item that was made in America, not one in that entire audience. And that was stunning to me. And that really hit home. And I've paid a lot of attention to where my clothes come from ever since then. Do you have that experience when you do that in an audience?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that 97% stat pretty much holds true for the most part. Depends on what audiences you're talking to. But for the most part, our garment industry has left and gone global because it's so labor intensive. So for instance, to make a pair of Levi's at the Cambodian factory I went to, it takes 85 people to just sew them together. That doesn't count the person who frays the pockets at a grinding stone. That doesn't count the person who beside them who puts holes, frays knees in the holes of frays holes in the knees of jeans. You know, they make our jeans look cool. I mean, this is all kind of a really manual process, so it goes to cheaper wages. Where when I visited Bangladesh in 2007, the wage was about $24 per month for a garment worker, and in Cambodia, I believe those jean makers were making around $50 per month. Which, some context for that: rice in Bangladesh for a family of four for 1 month costs $15 per month. So you have $24 of income for the single mother of three children, and who needs to feed her family rice, which costs $15 per month. So it's kind of tough, but there also aren't a lot of opportunities out there, which is a really important part of the discussion as well.
Yeah, I want to get into the kind of the economics of this from both the third world view and from the developed world view a little bit later in the program. I want to bring in Donna and Kiki now because I think it's very important for our listeners to know that these issues are not just abstract issues that we're talking about with you, who is, you know, a famous author and traveler, but these are issues that are very important here at home and that are taught to our local students and will be discussed at the Peace and Justice Conference at the end of this month at Northampton Community College. So, Kiki and Donna, please tell us a little bit about that conference where Kelsey is going to be the keynote speaker, I might add.
Sure. This year, we are going to hold our fourth annual Peace and Justice Conference. And we are very excited that something that started 4 years ago is taking hold on campus. It's in sync with the rest of our college's mission. We recently, our president, Dr. Mark Erickson, unveiled his strategic focus, and one of the elements included in that is diversity and global awareness. So we as a campus community realize that In order to prepare our students, we need to incorporate in our classrooms and in our activities, campus activities, we need to make our students more aware about what's going on with not only diversity in our own local and national community, but also globally. So we're very excited that this year Kelsey's coming to speak about his experiences, because his work just falls right into what we want to expose our students to. So.
And Kelsey has a great way of reaching students, I think, with his style. What I've seen from his videos online and his website, I can see that it's a natural fit for our students and where they're coming from. And introducing these very complex ideas in a friendly and easy-to-digest kind of way.
Well, by the way, Kelsey's website is kelseytimmerman.com for those of you who want to check him out a little bit more. When Kelsey talks to young people, and I guess, Kelsey, I'm actually directing this at you since you have not yet spoken to the students at Northampton Community College. Do you actually see light bulbs go on, Kelsey, or do you find that this generation of college students is already pretty hip to what's going on out there, or is it a little bit of both?
I think that there's definitely some connections that I make that maybe they haven't made before. So I definitely see those light bulbs going off in the audience, which really kind of feeds me. Amazing things is sometimes I talk to audiences abroad as well, to audiences who I was talking to this group in at a school in Peru, the country, and I always thought, wow, why am I going to tell them about, you know, life in the developing world and life for people who produce our things, whether it's farmers or factory workers? I mean, these people live around producers, right? And it was amazing that they really hadn't thought about that. In many ways, they were almost more insulated from that than we are. You know, so it's, I think it's something that a lot of us don't think about. There's surrounded by these labels, and they just kind of magically appear. So when someone stands up there and introduces you to, you know, a slave that works on a cocoa farm in Ivory Coast, suddenly you look at chocolate different when that person has a name. So I think that's one of the ways I really can connect with students and with an audience, is because I start with stories. I tell the stories of these people. I don't start with statistics and politics. I mean, it's all about the stories of people. And let's put the politics aside and let's just talk about the reality of this person's life and how they're trying to provide for their families. And I think that students can connect with that when we see the common humanity in someone in Ivory Coast who maybe we feel like we could not relate to. And, you know, what could we possibly have in common with a slave on a cocoa farm who is, 20 years old? Well, you know, I'll be talking to a lot of 20-year-olds. And one thing I really hope that they come away with is that look at the opportunity that this particular individual I'm talking about on the cocoa farm in Ivory Coast named Solo, look at the opportunities life has presented with him, and what would he give to be sitting where they are. So I think that's a message that students can connect with, and they can feel and they can relate to that individual.
Kelsey, tell a little bit the story of Solo, because when you told it to me, I know it really stayed with me, and it was one of those things that the tape continued to play in my head for days after we had talked about it, especially the way the story ends. Could you tell our audience that story?
Yeah, for sure. I went to Ivory Coast because that's where about two-thirds of the cocoa and American chocolate comes from. And that's one of the islands I followed back. And each place in the where am I eating adventure, I wanted to hang out with the farmers and farm alongside them and get to know them. So after days of visiting farms and farmers and cocoa farms, we eventually ended up at the farm of our guide. And so we showed up at this farm, and I wanted to go out in the fields and work and swing a machete and cut open the cocoa pods, which actually grow on trees, which, you know, a lot of people never even knew that. We don't even know what it looks like, the raw products in chocolate. So I show up at this farm, and the guide, who doesn't speak any English, has someone who works for him who does, and he's from Ghana. And his name is Solo, and he came from Ghana to work on the cocoa farms. And in Ghana, English is the official language. So Solo, we go out into the field, to, you know, he's going to show me how to cut open things and how to process it. And just in the course of doing this, we're talking. And I learned that he's been on the farm for 4 months and hasn't been paid, that he might get paid at the end of a year worth of working. And that he told me that the donkeys get treated better than he does because at least they get fed when they don't work. He told me that they do worse things than beat him. And, so he's a slave by definition, by the reality of the situation. He's a slave. He has to leave. He's not allowed to leave. And he called my guide master. And when you hear someone and you know, today's day and age, call another human being master, just like shakes something inside of your soul. And so when these moments of, you know, do I try to do something? Is that a foolish thing to do? Or, you know, how can I do this in a responsible way if I choose to do something? So I chose to hire Solo away from his master as my guide, as my translator for the next day to talk to other cocoa farmers. And that's what we did. And I never said, hey, Solo, I'm going to give you a shot at freedom. That's what it was. So we talked with some farmers. I paid Solo $40 for a day worth of translating. And then he said, I'm going to go to Ghana. And I said, well, how? I'm not going to stop you. You know, I'm not going to stop you. You're a free man as far as I'm concerned. And then around that time, I get a text from Solo's master saying that if I go with Solo to Ghana, he will have me arrested. And so there was, you know, may or may not have been people looking for us. And eventually Solo and I get separated. And I have no idea where he went. And days later, I learned that he was back on the farm, back on the cocoa farm. Now, did someone come and get Solo and take him back to the farm? Or even scarier than that, did Solo look at his options and saw that there were so few opportunities, and he chose to go back to the farm? He chose that slavery. So all I was left with was a note to give to his parents in Ghana that he'd given me earlier that said, my mother and father, I am not missing. This is Solomon. I'm in Ivory Coast. Don't worry about me. And went to Ghana to try to find his parents. And so, you know, the slavery exists. And when you meet one of you know, 100,000 slaves in West Africa,
it certainly stays with you, Kelsey, and that I think that story is definitely going to stay with our listeners, as it has with me. We are going to take a short break. We'll let everybody take a deep breath after that story, and please stay with us. We will be right back. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY.
WDIY is pleased to partner with the Allentown Symphony Orchestra, presenting Mozart's Requiem Saturday, March 8th at 8 p.m. and Sunday, March 9th at 3 p.m. Program highlights include Mozart's Requiem, Barber's Cello Concerto, and Mozart's Overture to the Marriage of Figaro, with the Allentown Symphony Chorus and special guest Christine Lamprea, winner of the 2013 Shat String Competition. For information, millersymphonyhall.org.
You're listening to WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station. If you appreciate and value the programming we provide, including NPR's in-depth news coverage, our local public affairs programs, and the diverse mix of music we broadcast each day, please consider becoming a member. Membership is our most important source of revenue. We can't do it without you. You can make a secure donation online at wdiy.org. That's wdiy.org. And thanks for your support.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Discourse, where we're exploring the world of global food production through the eyes of author and storyteller Kelsey Timmerman, along with Northampton Community College professors Dr. Kiki
Anastasakis. Yeah.
Thank you. And Donna Acera. I am going to get that name right, Kiki, by
you
the end of the evening.
You can just call me Kiki.
Okay. So returning to the subject at hand tonight, which is social justice and the fact that most of our food, or much of our food, and almost all of our clothing comes from the developing world. And how fair is that? Kelsey, I told you that we were going to come back to the economic issues, and I want to do that a little bit right now. You know, you look at companies like Walmart, where it's all about the price and it's all about beating down the people who bring them the clothes and make the clothes. And you wonder, does the American public care enough about the people in the third world to pay 50 cents more or a dollar more for a shirt? Where do you fall on that line? Have you done any research about the economics, or are you more focused really on the people on the front end?
Yeah, so for instance, I guess one of the ways that people are kind of conscious consumers it's fair trade, right? So 34% of Americans are actually aware of what fair trade is. So that's, you know, 34%. Comparing that to Europe, where it's at 90%. So you know, I think that we are moving in the right direction on some of these issues, but we also, I think too often, we kind of remove ourselves from being part of the problem as well. I mean, we all have a part to play. You know, why are these prices going down? Why does a coffee farmer make 1 cent per mocha that we buy at Starbucks? Why does a cocoa farmer make 1/3 of 1 penny for the amount of cocoa that's in a Hershey's bar? But I think you asked a really good question. You know, would we pay more? I think that it'd be great to have more of an opportunity to make that decision. And more companies are giving us a chance to do that, but it's kind of slow. So, for instance, like cocoa farmers in Ivory Coast, they make about $300 per year. And the cocoa farmer that I met and write the most about in the book, named Michael, he said that in order to give his family the kind of life that he would like to give them, he would have to earn about half a penny more for that bar of Hershey chocolate that we bought. So, you know, the listeners out there, would you pay a half a penny more to able to give a guy who basically supplies the most important ingredient for your chocolate bar, the life that his family, you know, deserves?
Well, Kelsey, I think it's important to point out, though, that half a penny, let's keep that in mind. But now let's move the half a penny forward through the process. And by the time that Hershey pays that farmer a half a penny more, does it come out at the other end as just a half a penny, or has that half a penny multiplied several times through the process? So would it only be a half a penny more on the Hershey bar, or would it be 25 or 50 cents or a dollar more?
Well, that's the thing. For that, you know, for that half a penny to magically jump this long chain of players who are moving this commodity and processing this commodity around the world, I mean, for the most part, the chocolate is the added value product, and it leaves Ivory Coast as the raw product of cocoa, and the value is really not added a whole lot until it gets to the United States. That's a really good point. And there are a lot of producers and there are a lot of consumers, but there are very few companies in between that move those commodities, so they can kind of control things a bit more than the rest of us. They have more power than the producers and consumers.
All right. I want to come back, Kelsey, to the first point that I should have talked about before we started on the half a penny. And that is the fact that since we're only at 34% in this country, would you define fair trade for our listening audience, please?
Yeah, for sure. So, fair trade is a certification that farmers and brands can get that sets a certain set of standards of social and environmental standards in place. And those are upheld and inspected. So a couple of things that are really standard about fair trade is a minimum price, right? So for instance, coffee is like the longest fair trade commodity. Fair trade coffee is kind of where fair trade started. So there's a minimum price. So the farmer knows that no matter what happens to the global coffee price, I will at least get paid this much, right? which up until recently, the last 10 years, it hasn't been that big of an issue because the global coffee price has been above that fair trade minimum price. Well, right now, it has plummeted beneath that fair trade minimum price. So farmers who are making that fair trade minimum price aren't necessarily making very much money. They're losing it less fast than the ones who aren't. So that fair trade minimum price kind of sets a bottom of what happens to that, you know, the farmer's crop and what they're going to get for it. So that's a really, really important thing, especially right now. Another really important aspect is the social premium that goes back to farmers who are fair trade certified. So I believe for coffee, I think it's 20 cents for every pound goes back to the coffee cooperative, and then they can vote on how to spend that additional money. So they can build a school, they can build roads, they can divvy that to all the farmers themselves. It's a kind of really democratic process and all of that. So those are the really, really two key important things about fair trade, the minimum price and then the social premium, and then the standards, the social and environmental standards as well.
I think we need to make sure our audience knows, for those who care about these kinds of issues, that that fair trade certification is almost always printed and stated on a package. And if you want to impact this issue, you want to look for that fair trade certification. You will find it on coffee. You will find it on chocolate. You will find it sometimes on even fresh fruits and vegetables. Donna, Kiki, are there other things that you can think of that you'll find fair trade on?
Well, I can think of the 10,000 Villages. If I am correct, they're still. I know there is a 10,000 Villages store where I live in New Jersey, but I think that here in the Lehigh Valley Mall,
there is
a 10,000 Villages,
yes.
And they exclusively sell fair trade products. When you go to the store, and I mean some of the fair trade products you find at the supermarket, a regular supermarket, but when I go to 10,000 Villages, you can find anything from coffee and tea, to ceramics,
yes,
earrings,
jewelry,
yeah.
Yes, scarves,
a lot of handmade
textiles,
jewelry,
yes.
Textiles,
mm-hmm.
tablecloths, mm-hmm. and whatever. So there's a lot of different types of mm-hmm. of products that are available. I have to agree with Kelsey that the movement towards fair trade and the awareness on the part of consumers in the United States is progressing, but very slowly. When I tell my students, how many of you know about fair trade? You know, I see maybe in a class of 30, 35, I see maybe four or five hands, mm-hmm. Of students that are aware, but the rest of them really are not still.
Which is why it's so important to bring Kelsey
exactly,
to
right.
NCC and to the Lehigh Valley.
Right.
To just educate more and more people about this.
Right. And I think as educators, we need to do more with regards to, you know, what is the moral responsibility of a consumer? Because we are such a consumer-oriented society. Is there any ethical part that we can play? And I think increasingly, because we're becoming such a more interconnected world and our younger generation, they can access Kelsey's website, or they can find out about slavery in the Ivory Coast, or, you know, sex mm-hmm. trafficking about young women somewhere in Asia or around the world.
If we can get them off of Facebook, that is.
That's right, yeah. But I think once they become aware, then the question is, so what do I do about it? Mm-hmm. So our first task is to make them aware through visits like Kelsey, and then the question is, you know, to direct them. So as a consumer, what kind of choices do I make? And, we do have the choice. Some people can afford, and I personally willingly pay the extra dollar and a quarter to get fair trade chocolate. And because it's, you know, when you buy something, it's not just the acquisition of, you know, something that you need, but also what is the impact of my action, mm-hmm. you know, as a buyer? Does it have an effect on somebody else? And I think that's the beauty of Kelsey's stories, that it makes our students more aware about that.
Kelsey, you have a... you have a theory about that on another level also. You mentioned to me that as America, we should be doing what we're good at. And I found that a really strong statement that resonated with me, that, you know, we're not necessarily going to do what you do, most of us. We're not going to go into, you know, the jungle and try and help the coca farmers. But what we can do is we're very smart. We're very good with technology. We have, you know, we're accountants and we're business people. We're entrepreneurs. Are there things that we can do beside looking for fair trade products and putting our dollar where it does the most good? Are there volunteer opportunities out there? Are there things that we can do to step up to the plate to help some of the people that you have been with?
And so when I talk to students, you know, I talk to them about how, you know, we live lives as local citizens and we live lives as global citizens. And we need to try to figure out this balance. Like, when my 20s, I'm 35 now, and for a lot of my 20s, I was just traveling around the world getting stories, and I was more of a global citizen. I really hadn't grown roots anywhere and belonged to a community where I interacted with people on a regular basis. So I think we're really kind of searching for this identity as local and global citizens, and part of that is in how we consume, what we wear, what we eat. But that's just part of it. You know, I think the bigger part of it, the biggest way that we all can have an impact, is doing the thing that we are best at individually and putting that to use to help our local citizens, to help our global communities. There's a great quote by St. Catherine of Siena who says, "If you are who you should be, you will set the world on fire." And, you know, that I take that to mean, like, if you are an accountant and you love crunching numbers, there's a not-for-profit somewhere in the world or somewhere in your community that could benefit from your abilities. So for me to go volunteer for Habitat for Humanity, which is a great organization, but for me to swing a hammer all day isn't the best impact, isn't going to make the best impact. So how could I use my storytelling abilities and mobilize other people to tell stories to make a larger impact? And that's where my organization I co-founded called the Pacing Project came from. So I encourage students, I encourage us all to look at what do we do? You know, what is it that we do already? What are we passionate about? And how can we put that thing to use? And to me, that makes a bigger impact on our world than anything else that we could do.
And Kelsey, you actually do occasionally go on trips with students. Is that right?
Yeah, I have. So I've been very fortunate that my work gets used as a freshman common reader at a lot of universities, so they have the whole freshman class read it. And some of these schools have, they always do travel components. They try to go somewhere that's listed in the book. And so someone started asking me, hey, can we travel with you, or will you come with us? So I finally said yes. And I've gone to Honduras and Guatemala with students, and it's a great experience because I've been traveling since I got out of school, so for about almost 15 years now. And as you get a little bit road weary, you maybe lose those fresh eyes. You don't see the world with the wonder that you did at the beginning. So it's really important for me to go out there and see the students who, this is their first time they're getting that brand new, shiny, great smelling passport punched. And then they're seeing their first Coca-Cola sign in another language, or they're seeing a little boy selling something alongside the road, and how they think and how they feel about that, and how they're seeing the world. So I really enjoy doing that with students.
That is such an exciting thing to do, Kelsey. No matter how many wonders in the world you've seen, there is nothing like seeing it through the eyes of someone else, and especially a younger person who's seeing it for the first time. I just put up a Facebook post the other day on my professional page, and it's time for me to renew my passport. And so I had gone through my old passport and looked at all the stamps in there from Afghanistan and the United Arab Emirates and Hungary and the Czech Republic. And it makes you excited just to look at those things and to think about the adventures you had and to realize that there's still adventures lying to await out there. And it's wonderful when you can share it with other people. You have certainly created a wonderful life for yourself and a wonderful adventure for others. It's great information that you're sharing. Kelsey, when you go with the students, is it as an observer, or does everyone kind of pitch in and, you know, work the farm and do various jobs?
Oh, yeah, I'm one of the gang. Like, I wouldn't do very well just to hang on the outskirts. Like, I want to get in there and, you know, play soccer and just get destroyed by the villagers who we're playing against and swing the machete. I remember this with the group that we went to Honduras with students from West Texas A&M University. We were doing supposed to do like a service project one day, and it was to mow the grass of the schoolyard. And we show up and mow the grass, and they give us like six machetes. And we're like, oh, wow. I mean, a lot of us have never really even used a machete before. I had, and I knew that I was awful at using it. It turns out the students were awful at using it as well. But we sat out there and we hacked at the grass and got blisters. And we did the work of, you know, two Hondurans. It would take them about 30 minutes to do the work that we did, six of us, in about 2 hours. It was, we were not very efficient. But yeah, I like to go out there and just be one of them and interact with them as they're interacting with the world.
And nobody needed any stitches?
No. I think just a few Band-Aids and maybe we had some sore muscles a little bit later, but no stitches.
So what do we have? I just got the two-minute warning here to the next break. So a great way for you to sum up, tell me what you think the students learned. What changes did you see in them? Because quite frankly, most of the students, even those Texans from Texas A&M, I imagine this was a pretty eye-opening experience for them. What kind of comments did you get from them on the trip home? How do you think they were changed by what they went through with you?
Oh, wow. I mean, it was pretty remarkable. I mean, really, everyone was like, it's changed my life. And I believe it because travel, my first trip changed mine. So there were comments. One of the young women that was on the trip said, I'm going to break up with my boyfriend because he values the wrong things. You know, that they're going to go back and they're going to give back more to their own community because they see the community that exists in the village in Honduras, and they look at their own communities and maybe see a little bit of poverty of that back home in Texas. So how can we build those bonds of community once again? So, I think it's a pretty life-changing experience for us all. When we step out of the country for the first time, I think it really makes us reflect on where we come from and where we fit into the world.
I think it also makes us reflect on how uniquely isolated and privileged we are to not truly understand what other people go through. And on that note, we are going to take a break. Please stay with us. We will be right back. You won't want to miss this final segment. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY Community Public Radio. Stay with us.
Celtic Fair, a celebration of Celtic music and culture, from its roots in Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Galicia, and Brittany, to its branches in Australia, Cape Breton, Canada, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, and the Lehigh Valley. Bringing you music, interviews, and a weekly culture calendar every Thursday from 7 to 9 on WDIY Allentown listener-supported community public radio.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. For more information, visit wdiy.org.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Discourse, where we're exploring the world of global food production through the eyes of author and storyteller Kelsey Timmerman, along with Northampton Community College professors Kiki and Donna. We've agreed that we're going to skip the last name since I cannot pronounce one of them. We're going to return to this wonderful subject. We have Kelsey Timmerman with us also, the author of Where Am I Eating? And he is going to be appearing as the keynote speaker at the upcoming Peace and Justice Conference at Northampton Community College on March 27th. And we want to use this last segment of the program to talk about that conference in a little bit more detail and to encourage the listening public to attend the conference. It is a really fascinating subject. It is free. It is open to the public. It is in your backyard if you are in the Lehigh Valley. I just told Kiki and Donna that I have cleared my schedule for the day, and I intend to be there and hear every minute of it. And I want to turn it over now to Kiki and Donna to talk a little bit about the conference, a little bit about the history and what the day is going to look like so people can decide, when they can come and what they'll hear.
And we're very excited because Kelsey is the keynote speaker. Mm-hmm. But before and after Kelsey's appearance, we're connecting with local groups that work for peace and social justice. And Kiki, I know we have Lehigh Valley Veterans for Peace. We have a local Amnesty International.
The local chapter of Amnesty International, the local chapter of ACLU, hopefully Lehigh Valley Committee of Concern.
In the morning, we have those groups?
In the morning, we start at 9:30, and until right before Kelsey's talk, we have what we call Community Expo, where, we provide a space and refreshments for all of these different community organizations to interact with one another and to explain to our students and all the conference participants the work that they do. And it's interesting because the word that comes to mind is glocal. Mm-hmm. And I'm very happy that Kelsey is using that word in his speech as well, because these groups are operating at the community level, but often their goal is to make the world a better place. And so often we think that, obviously, it's wonderful to travel and to get students to go abroad, but many of our students cannot do that. So how can we improve the world? We need to show them that there are many things that one can do locally to make our global condition better. So at the same time, we're going to have some honor students. They're working right now and writing their research papers on social justice issues around the world, so there will be a breakout session at the same time for that. And after Kelsey's talk, we're going to break for lunch, and the afternoon breakout session will be a group discussion. We're going to break up into groups and discuss and debate on Kelsey's themes of his talk.
And can we give a timeline on that? Kelsey will start when and end when, and then
right.
What happens?
Sure. So we start 9:30 to 10:45 with the community expo, refreshments, and student research paper presentations. Kelsey's talk starts at 11 to 12:15.
In the Lipkin Theater, which is in Kopacek Hall on the campus.
Okay. Yes. And then we break for lunch. We move from Lipkin to the College Center building, room 220.
Will people be on their own for lunch? Or
we are trying our best to provide a modest lunch for free. I don't know how far we can go and
okay.
how many we can feed.
Would they have access to the cafeteria if that doesn't happen? Okay, good. All
yes.
right.
So there will be some free lunch, but somebody who's very, very hungry may want to pay a visit to our cafeteria, which is on the same floor, in the second floor of College Center. That's from 12:30 to 1:30. And then 1:30 to 3, we have our afternoon breakout session, which will build and expand on Kelsey's themes.
Okay. And what will some of those breakout sessions be?
Well, it will be one session in one big room.
Okay.
We were still, we're still in the planning phases. There are different formats that we are considering. But it looks like we're going to end up having 10 round tables because rather than having a panel and our students passively listening to a group of quote-unquote specialists, we are thinking that if we have students, community organizers, teachers, staff, all sitting on the same table, our students will feel more comfortable asking questions, making comments, and voicing their own opinions. And mm-hmm. often when you have a large audience, as Donna knows, you know, she's the communications professor, we try to enhance their engagement, right, Donna?
Absolutely. They'll feel much more comfortable expressing themselves, asking the questions that they wouldn't ask in front of a large audience mm-hmm. at a small round table.
Mm-hmm. Now, Kelsey, I know that you do a lot of this speaking, and I know that you have actually been in the Lehigh Valley before, so apparently your message really really resonates here.
Yeah, it's great. I talked at Cedar Crest, I talked at Lehigh as well, so I'm looking forward to coming back, and maybe we'll see some familiar faces from some of those places as well, and looking forward, it's such an honor to reach folks with the stories of the people who let me into their lives. They let me into their lives to share their stories. So to be able to do that and to be able to share those stories with especially college students who are at a very formative part of their academic career and you know, where they're going to stand as global citizens, global and local citizens, it's just a great honor. So I really appreciate all the hard work that goes into putting on a conference like this.
Well, we certainly appreciate being able to have you back in the Lehigh Valley. When you speak to an audience like that, do you ask for, because I did hear you speak before here in the Valley, but it was not as much students as it was more professors and administration. When you speak to an audience that has a lot of students in it like this, do you do an interactive type of presentation, or are you pretty much presenting?
Oh, no, there are definitely ways that I can interact with students. I mean, the larger the audience, the little bit harder it is. But I will have everyone just do what you did. Check the label on your shirt. I will have everyone stand up, and I'll ask people who had a banana in the last 24 hours to sit down, people who had chocolate in the last 24 hours to sit down, and people who had coffee in the last 24 hours to sit down. And there won't be very many people left standing. Because and those are all products that come from somewhere else. So there'll be some interaction as well.
Good. Kiki?
I was just wondering whether, Kelsey, you're going to do the trick with the underwear. We watched that.
Oh, now, wait a minute. We're a family show.
I know. But it's extremely effective. I know Donna and I have watched quite a bit of Kelsey's YouTube videos, and he has some tricks up his sleeve that are extremely effective. I know he can connect with our students.
Yeah, so I have a pair of really stretched out old Jingle Bees Christmas boxes that have been seen by college students around the country.
Yes, I can't wait to see that.
Those will make an appearance. This is kind of a weird way to put it, but I would feel naked without them on stage, so I will have those.
And I'm determined to get my picture taken with those boxers.
Yay, we'll make it happen.
Thank you.
Talking about Facebook. Kelsey, I want to make sure that you have a chance before we have to sign off to talk about your FACE project.
Yeah, so the FACING project is kind of a continuation of what I do already. Start with stories, and then it's at facingproject.com. The mission is to connect people through stories to strengthen communities. We do that by matching up writers in the community with people facing a certain issue, whether that's autism or poverty or homelessness. Or tonight in Atlanta, Georgia, they're launching their Facing Sex Trafficking event where they'll release a book. So the writer tells a story as if they are the person facing that topic. And it's kind of this forced empathy where the writer has to walk in their shoes. It's written in the first person. Then the book is published. We usually have a monologue reading event, mobilize the arts community around this storytelling thing. And, the community carries its own story and the responsibility of that. Because I know I've had my life changed by people sharing their stories with me and then having that responsibility to share their stories in a way that make an impact. So I know there's so many untold stories out there, and I will never get a chance to tell them all. So by mobilizing other people in the community to carry their own stories and share those stories, that's what the Facing Project is all about.
Well, I was fascinated looking at it today online, and we'll certainly discuss this privately, but I do want to make a public commitment to you, Kelsey, that I would like to participate, and I would like to write a story for the project, and you and I can discuss what that's going to look like, and you can tell me what topic you'd like me to tackle and where you'd like me to tackle it, but I am volunteering for you publicly
now. That's great. Thanks. We'll definitely put you to work.
I'm looking forward to it. I really am. I do want to also plug two other organizations, because we were talking before about how you can have an impact, and I am involved with two organizations that have a direct impact on people. In fact, on Monday, I'm headed into the United Nations Conference on the Status of Women. And those two organizations that support women, since we are in Women's History Month, is the Business Council for Peace, that's bpeace.org, and the Open a Door Foundation, which is Open a Door Foundation, OAD.org. And Open a Door Foundation has actually five Rwandan female students in the Lehigh Valley right now studying. And they are three at Lehigh and two at Lafayette, and they are just outstanding young women. So those are two organizations that I support and I work with. So I want our listening audience to know that there are ways that you can be right here in the Lehigh Valley and you can get involved and you can really have an impact. In fact, if you're interested in mentoring one of our wonderful, brilliant Rwandan young women, you can contact me after the show at Pamela Varcone. So let's wrap it up for our audience, and let's talk about how we're going to influence this next generation and what are some of the lessons we want them to take away.
Well, if I may pick up from where Kelsey left off or where you left off with regards to taking students to other countries. This coming summer, Dana is taking a group of students from Northampton and two other community colleges to Costa Rica. And this is the first time that she's going, but she's done numerous other trips to the Navajo Reservation. And, you know, in terms of exposing, whether it is within the country or outside, maybe, Dana, you want to tell us a little bit, because that was a recent trip. And, of course, you know, whether it is visiting Costa Rica or whether it is going to a Navajo reservation, what exactly was the goal when you took your students there?
Well, like Kelsey says, taking students to another country, or in our case to the Navajo reservation, it changes everything for them. It changes their life from that moment on, because number one, we don't hear a lot about Navajo reservation. We don't hear a lot about the plight of the Native Americans all across America, unless you're specifically looking for that information. And then, and so to first of all become aware of it, and then to experience it, to go, I've not been to Costa Rica yet, but I'm looking forward to taking these students. They're actually taking a course called Peace Studies and
Conflict Resolution. That's the name of the course mm-hmm. we have created. And in fact, Dana will take them to a women's co-op where women sell their own products, and also to a fair trade coffee plantation. But I don't mean to interrupt.
No, because actually this is a course that Kiki created several years ago, and we have been running it through the college every summer. So I'm looking forward to, again, just exposing students, and like Kelsey said, seeing it through their eyes, because I learn more than all of my students combined when I travel with them, when I take them. They push me to know more, to learn more about the culture that they're just being introduced to. So I think, you know, just at a community college, to be able to travel like this all around the world, we have mm-hmm. students going over spring break to all different countries in the world. And then in the summer, we have lots of study abroad courses. To be able to have access to that at a community college level is really important.
And you have international students who attend to the college also.
I think that's a great point, Pam, that when we talk about the workers that Kelsey is talking about, when I talk about them in my class, some of our students are from those countries that we talk about. Mm-hmm. I remember just the other day, in my honors interdepartmental science class, and we were talking about the status of women and in Bangladesh, and you know, in preparation for Kelsey's visit, and there was a woman, a young woman, very bright, from India. She comes from a family of businessmen, and we started a discussion, and I could see her and another student, also female student from Vietnam. They were sitting right on the front row. Another student from Japan, and another one from the Philippines. All young women, and I could tell that for them these stories resonated in a way that perhaps it didn't. They actually got it. And then we got into a discussion about the whole outsourcing business that, you know, we're familiar with, and whether is it in fact that, you know, jobs are being lost in the United States, and is it an us versus them type of relationship, or is it really that we are, as Kelsey says, kind of like there's a common humanity. We have a movement in the United States to increase the minimum wage. And unless we take care of that, yes, we're going to have working poor people in the United States that do pay attention to every penny that they spend. So, you know, for us to take care of the workers in these other countries, we also need to think of, you know, the working people in the United States and how we, by increasing the minimum wage in the U.S., they will be able to buy fair trade products. So it's not an us versus them type of situation, but it's what we want our students to get is that this is affecting everybody, and we can't anymore talk about individual separate countries.
We're all connected.
We are all connected. It is truly a global economy. We're down to the last minute, Kelsey, and I'm going to let you wrap it up before we see you in 3 weeks from today, March 27th at Northampton Community College. I'm going to let you leave us with final thoughts.
The average American consumes the amount of resources of 32 Kenyans. If the rest of the 7 billion people on the planet consumed like we did, we would need 5 planets. So, you know, I think that comes with some responsibility. And every time we walk into a store, whether that was provided with goods from a garment factory somewhere around the world or it's a grocery store, you know, every grocery store is a farmer's market. And every bite and every purchase is a decision about man and land. So I'm really looking forward to sharing my stories and the friends that I made around the world sharing their stories with all of you. And thank you so much for having me on.
Kelsey, I just couldn't wrap it up any better, and I want to thank you very much. I look forward to seeing you in 3 weeks, as I know Kelsey and Donna do, and we'll see you here in the Lehigh Valley. Donna and Kiki, thank you very, very much, and we thank you, our listeners, for being with us this evening. I hope you've enjoyed this program as much as we have. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY Community Public Radio. Good night.
This is WDIY Allentown, 88.1 FM and WDIY.org, serving the Lehigh Valley. We're at WDIY 88.1 FM Allentown, Bethlehem, and on translators 93.9 East in Phillipsburg and 93.7 in Fogelsville and Trexlertown. Stay tuned. Coming up next, news headlines from NPR, and that will be followed by Celtic Fair.
From NPR News in